You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. HRN is food and beverage radio supported by you. Learn more at heritageradionetwork.org.
It's the final stretch of 2022 and HRN needs your help. Become an HRN member with a donation of any amount at heritageradionetwork.org/donate.
So you don't shun the devil with your rock and roll, Lord. Knows that country music's gonna save your soul. The devil runs his groove in them rhythm and blues that sin. It's gonna get you some in the end.
Welcome back to The Speakeasy. I'm Damon Bolte.
I'm Souther Teague.
And I'm Greg Benson.
Guys, it is our end of year wrap up show, our holiday tradition.
Internationally famous wrap up holiday show.
Exactly. So, I mean, what we do every year is we wrap up the year, kind of like, to me, I can't remember if it was like Oprah or Martha Stewart or someone like that. They said there was this thing where they had a box. And rather than making New Year's resolutions, which everyone, historically, kind of like fall out of pretty quickly after the New Year starts. And then when they don't actually follow through with their New Year's resolutions, they get really bummed out and it's pretty sad and shitty. And so rather than doing that, they suggested that you have a box
full of spiders.
Box full of spiders. But it's basically like,
you like swarms of things, don't you?
Yeah. You take all your accolades, just things like movies, concert tickets, things like that, that you notable things that happen during the year. Like say you got an article or you released a book or whatever it might be, you got an award for your bar, you put that in there. And then the end of the year, you open the box and you check out all the good things that happened during the year, right? So, and then the idea is that it's meant to inspire you for the next year. And it's not something that you might, not follow through with because you did all those things, rather than a resolution. So today, this is our end of year wrap-up show. So let's talk about what happened this year.
We're reaching into that metaphorical box.
Box full of spiders.
And there are some
you can have more than one box, Greg.
Yeah. Don't get them mixed up.
Yeah. There were some spiders this year, though, for sure.
Oh yeah, and every year there will be a few spiders, both literally and metaphorically. But I honestly, it's kind of been cool to look back on a year for once and be like, you know what, that was pretty good. Like I think we did a pretty good job. Like let's all give ourselves a pat on the back. We got our shit together. Like nothing blew up. Nothing was catastrophically bad. In I'm talking in like an existential sense here. And ultimately at the end of the day, it's kind of we're at a point where I'm just glad we don't have to play that stupid game that everyone was doing this time last year. It was like, geez, 2020 or 2021, which was worse? Which, first of all, which was the year where you were wiping down your Doritos and bleach when you brought them back from the bodega? Right. That was the worst year. Like, it's not really a contest. But I'm glad that we're not being inundated with all of this negative messaging. And we can kind of look back and be like, you know what? This year, it wasn't all spiders.
Yeah, I think last year, exactly. I think last year at this time, it was more like, the battle cry was we're still here, meaning we made it, we endured. This year feels more like we made some progress. We're not still here, here we are. So I feel like there's a lot more positivity coming off of 2022 as we wrap it up and put it to bed, but still we had some definite highs and some definite lows, and I'm loving this box idea. I'm going to do it for this next coming year, because even as you were saying it, Damon, I started rolling the Rolodex in my own accomplishments for the last year and thinking like, wow, a tough year, but boy, a lot got done.
Yeah, I think so too. Just kind of like glaring observation that I've noticed, just in like the bar and restaurant world, is that a lot of parklets are starting to go away.
Oh, I'm so happy to see mine gone, by the way. Gosh, was I happy
But Souther, you loved that thing so much. You talked all the time about how much you adored it.
I loved it to death.
Literally to death. Yeah. Speaking of a box full of spiders, I mean, like, these sparklets were, like, you know, obviously a necessary thing, a necessity for, like, the businesses that were lucky enough to be able to build them, first of all, because not everyone was able to.
That's true. That's true.
So, you know, it was kind of a bailout in some ways, but, you know.
Oh, listen, as much as I hated it, simply for the service, right? Because you have to understand, it changed my businesses dramatically, you know, and the analogy that I used in the past was, you know, let's assume I opened a bait and tackle shop. I opened a bait and tackle shop because I love fishing and I love lures and I love talking about my favorite fishing holes, right? But then the thing had to be done where I had to suddenly operate a tire store. And I don't even have a car. I don't care about tires. I got nothing to talk about here. So, you know, I understand that it was a necessary evil in my mind, but I also understand that it saved my bacon and it saved a lot of people. So I'm grateful for them, but I am just as fucking grateful to see that thing go. Oof.
Yeah.
Man, they came with a bulldozer and a backhoe and they fucking knocked that son of a bitch down and I was so happy.
I'm imagining you just like kicking back with a lawn chair and shorts, just like sipping one of those like
this is almost
spicy margaritas you hate so much. Just kind of like, here's to you, you son of a bitch.
This is almost the picture that happened, Greg. That was pretty much good. I was out there with my camera, yeah, rolling.
It was a Manhattan. It wasn't a spicy margarita. Otherwise, exactly like that.
Pretty much.
But, you know, the demeanor also is like, you know, like for instance, like we at Grand Army, well, first of all, we were very, very lucky that we're on, you know, the corner of State and Hoyt, and they shut State Street down for part of the kind of Green Street project thing that they were doing in New York City. And so we had that one street on our corner that was always closed. And then on the weekends, they decided to close the other one down. So we had like a block party every weekend. We were very fortunate is all I'm saying. But yeah, also at the same time, the general demeanor of, I mean, I feel this way too. I don't know about you guys, but I fucking hate sitting outside now. Like I just want to be in a bar. And like, it doesn't matter if you have a parklet, you know, like if you're keeping it going, awesome. If it works for you, great. But like, I just want to, like, I love being in a bar. I love sitting at the bar and I love talking with the bartenders. And that's something that we were restricted, you know, stripped from us for a couple of years. And I like seeing people's faces for better or worse, you know, and I don't like seeing half of a face. So it's nice to see that, you know, looking back on a year ago, we were still masked up. And, you know, I had some, you know, like the other year end kind of wrap up things like on Spotify and Facebook and Instagram and social media stuff. It's like it's photos from this time last year and we're all wearing masks and we're doing stuff and we're inside. But, you know, so, I mean, I think we've come a long way. I know we have. I think we're really feeling it. Are we back to 100%? Absolutely not.
Oh, gosh, no.
You know, so will we ever be? I don't know. But we've come a long way. And I think, Greg, I know before the show, we were kind of talking about a little bit about that kind of feeling. Like we're still kind of like on pins and needles a bit, you know, when we're out and about. And I think you had some things to say about that, right?
Yeah, well, it's just, I don't feel like it's ever, you know, truly gonna go away. And I've sort of been thinking about this since I brought it up before the show, and just this notion that, you know, it's the same, but it's a little bit different. You know, there's still the parkades out there, although a lot of them are kind of falling into disrepair. You know, you can kind of still go into a bar, but it feels a little bit like things have changed. Like, and I think a large part of that is because a large chunk of the generation of people that were bartenders, and I'm a part of this, kind of took that opportunity to say, okay, you know, where else do we want to go? Just for me personally, I was feeling for a while, even before March 15th of 2020, that I was kind of like, you know, I was like, okay, I'd sort of reached the ceiling of where I wanted to be in the bar world, kind of like what's next for me. And that's enabled my, you know, that forced time out that we had for, you know, 18 months and change was useful for me to kind of like take a step back and chart a new course for myself. But that also means that, you know, there's a lot of new blood coming into these restaurants, and there's a lot of people who are kind of, you know, bringing fresh ideas and fresh perspectives and, you know, new just an entirely new way of looking at things in there. And I think that that's cool. And also it's a sign that I am, you know, getting older. That and the gray hairs that I see on my head when I look in the mirror every morning are just a sign that, like, oh, right, I'm not the young, cool person who's driving these trends anymore. Now I'm kind of like looking at them and commenting on them. And I think,
get off my lawn.
Basically. Yeah.
You're an observer and a commentator now. That's fine too. And I do agree with you, Greg. A lot of you know, youthful exuberance has been popping up behind bars. And I think we're going to see, you know, as they position themselves beyond just like, now I've got a job in a professional bar to now I'm maybe running that bar. We're going to see a lot of unique and innovative stuff coming down the pipe. And I think, you know, we had a couple of this past year, we had a couple of guests on who are from the show Drink Masters. And I think that that's going to sort of put our world on its ear a little bit too, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I'm just going to throw some insider information out there.
Yeah,
like as far as this year goes, you know, we've come a long way, but as far as like the actual like entertainment side of the bar biz, I'm talking about Drink Masters here. Which was great. We had Kate Gerwin on, we had LP on, you know, we've had Julie Reiner on several times. It's a great friend and neighbor of ours. And, you know, Julie.
Suzu's already agreed to be on next year. So we'll have Suzu on.
Yeah, totally. I get to hang out with him out here on the West Coast. So awesome. Awesome dude. You know, the funny thing is, like, we shot a TV show about 10 years ago. I was a contestant on it. It wasn't one of those things where they just cherry picked a bunch of bartenders from New York City, basically 24 to be exact. And a lot of really great people who've also been on this show, but you never know that they were on this TV show because it never aired.
Right.
It was sponsored. It was Tim Cooper won, and he won, like, he got paid and he opened up Sweetwater Social with the money that he made from that show. And the funny thing is it never aired because it was called The Bartender. And I think it's past the point statute of limitations for me to talk about this. I probably signed an NDA back then, but Julie was one of the hosts and just as she is on Drink Masters. And, you know, we went through this thing, there was a lot of money behind it, production, like it was like a thing, but like it never aired because it wasn't dramatic enough. It was called The Bartender, and they were trying to create drama between these bartenders. And, you know, like when you do the sidebar confessionals, and it's like, who do you want to knock out in this round or whatever? And we were all very, like, humbled. And, you know, like, we're like, actually, I kind of like to knock myself out because I'm up against some steep competition. And I also own a bar, and I need to go back and run it. This is taking up a lot of my time. But the funny thing is, it's like they couldn't get enough drama out. And the reason why there hasn't been a show about bartending on TV for this long is because if the producers are trying to create drama, we as bartenders are the ones who are supposed to alleviate drama from people's lives. So we're not in the business of being dramatic. When you go to a show format like Drink Masters, it becomes more about the drink, as the name implies, rather than the bartending side of things. Like, you know, like if you get a drink challenge and, you know, you have 90 minutes to come up with something, like you don't do that at a bar, you know, like during service. If you tell me it's going to be 90 minutes before I get my drink, I'm going to be gone in 90 seconds or faster, you know, and I'll be, you know, over at Omar Amargo where you've got a bottled cocktail that you can get to me in 9 seconds, you know? Exactly. So like, it's like a different thing. But what's really brilliant about that show is I've talked to a lot of let's call them civilians, right? People who don't work in the industry. And they're like, man, it's really fascinating. I didn't realize how much work went into making these cocktails. And it's like, yeah, well, that's why they cost what they cost. So like whenever you look at a menu, you don't like kind of like, it's not the price, but there's a lot of prep. There's a lot of logic. There's a lot of experience and know-how. And the show really, it highlights the culinary side of the drink making and creation process, you know, like, so I think it's really cool. And it's about time that there's a show about creating these drinks. And I think it's done really well.
Oh, I think it was I think it was cool as well. They obviously used the template of like Top Chef. And I think that was, you know, kind of a no brainer. Of course, there's lots of shows out there like that and it seems to work. So why not? I think that it had some flaws, but again, a great first outing, and it did crushingly well. Apparently, it was in the top 10 for Netflix for several weeks, so they'll obviously do a second season, and hopefully they'll smooth out some of the errors that they made, and the show will only continue to get better. I'm pretty excited about it, to be honest. I'll definitely be a watcher, that's for sure.
Yeah, but all the contestants did really well. I think there was an awesome just showcase of talent. But I want to talk about Julie Reiner for a second because she absolutely, she's one of my favorites. She's been a friend and peer in the industry. She was the only person when I was opening Grand Army. Everyone else was like, you're opening a bar? Oh, you're going to hate it. This is going to be the hardest you ever worked and blah, blah, blah. And I talked with Julie one night we were sitting there having a drink and she's like, so you're opening your bar, finally. And I was like, really? And she's like, yeah. She's like, I've wanted you to do that for a long time. And she's like, have you been talking to other people about this? And I'm like, yeah. And everyone says not very fun things about opening a bar. And she's like, yeah, they probably tell you it's the hardest thing you're going to do and blah, 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 blah. And I was like, yeah, that's exactly what they said. And she's like, fucking do it. She's been a huge inspiration for me. Great friend, super positive. Just a wealth of knowledge. We know that she's been in the game for, she is New York cocktail bar, like royalty,
Yeah, so for sure.
I'm so glad that they got her to host the show. She's very well-deserved. A lot of great guests that she brought on with, her friends, like Del DeGroff, and she's the right candidate and right person for that. For that role as the host. So I'm glad that it's awesome to see her succeeding like that,
Yeah, of course.
And another, just kind of like segueing from Dream Masters, she revived this year Milady's in Soho in Manhattan. And that bar is also it's very important, for anyone who's been around the bar scene or just hung around New York City for long enough, that ever got to go to Milady's. It was one of the only bars in Soho, which is really kind of crazy to me. One of my favorites, Finelli Cafe, just down the street, it's been going forever. It's the longest running bar, I think, in New York City, if I remember correctly. Or at least one of them. But Milady's was, it was just a neighborhood bar, kind of divey, tons of character. And it shuttered. And, Julie Reiner, she got in there and she revived it. And now it's taken on a new persona in certain ways because it wasn't a cocktail bar before. But now obviously it is because it's Julie Reiner. And so it's just cool. She kept the name, opened it back up. Great job.
Yeah. I mean, I think, I've always said, going back to you opening up a bar and her telling you to go for it and everybody telling you it was going to be hard. Listen, nothing cool is easy. If surfing was easy, then every poser on the planet would be out there surfing. You know what I mean? It's hard.
Posers die first, by the
way.
That's right. Yeah. I tried it this summer. It's not easy. I did it once. I sucked at it. Maybe I'll do it again. We'll see.
It's hard. Guitar playing is not easy. That's why cool people play guitars and people who aren't cool don't. things that are cool are not. They're not easy.
Okay. I'm going to stop you for a second, Souther, because, opening bars isn't easy. How many bars did you fucking open this year? Speaking of the year wrap-up.
That doesn't make it easy just because I did a lot. That makes me, hard-headed, I guess, is what my grandfather would probably call me. How many did we open this past year? Let's see. We opened Fred of Flower, Rabbit. We opened Avant Garde LA, and in this calendar year, I guess that's what we opened. However, we also moved two of our spaces to two new spaces that were larger, bigger upgrades for them. So that would have been Cadence and Proletariat, and we inked a deal to open a place in Boulder. So I guess six, kind of.
Goddamn.
Yeah.
Well, okay. To kind of touch on what you said, it's also something that Julie told me and my business partners have said before. It's whenever they talk about opening a bar or a restaurant or any business really in anything in New York City, for sure. It's hard work and it's a lot of work and you drive yourself crazy doing it. But the thing is, a lot of people who kind of told me, you know, it was going to be a hard thing to do. They owned like 3 or 4 or 5 bars and restaurants or businesses. And I was like, well, then why do you keep doing it? And they're like, well, once you get into it,
yeah,
you get into a rhythm and you understand what to look for. And you kind of, you end up learning a lot.
Yeah. A lot about business, a lot about life, a lot about yourself.
Each time, you know, it I wouldn't say it gets easier. You just know what to expect.
Exactly.
It's kind of like that thing, what they say about like New Yorkers, they're being rude. It's like, no, New Yorkers aren't rude. They're just very direct. They're busy. Yeah. And it's kind of like that same thing with like that kind of cadence of opening businesses and running them. It's like, you just kind of get into a rhythm and, you know, each time you just learn from your mistakes, I guess. Right.
Well,
let's talk about a drink that's popped up on the trendosphere.
I was hoping that was where the segue was going.
So the Negroni Spagliato with Prosecco.
Of course.
My God. We've talked about this a little bit, you know, in real time when it started hitting the internet. Negroni Spagliato is, you know, Spagliato means mistake. For the real listeners out there that don't know what it is, which by now I wouldn't believe that anyone didn't know what it is from the way it's training. But Spagliato is, it's Campari and vermouth, and instead of gin, it's Prosecco.
Delicious Prosecco, yes.
And it was accidentally made that way in a bar long ago. And yeah, it's great. It's like it's a spritz. It's a Negroni spritz, basically, sorts. And we're gonna get sued for using spritz. We're not talking about Aperol.
It's a Milano Torino spritz. I don't know what it is.
The thing is, it's not a Negroni, because Negroni, like, you know, Count Negroni was like, screw soda water, put gin in it. So if you're taking the gin out of it, you kind of can't call it a Negroni. So there's a lot of mistakes going on. But then to call out that it needs to be made with Prosecco is kind of like a, I don't know, pretty obvious to me, but but I don't know, like, is that the drink of 2022?
I think you need to cast your memory back a little further than that.
Yeah, I think there's a contender.
Bud Light Limerita?
I mean, you're waiting on my check, by the way.
It's in the mail.
I filled out the paperwork. They said it could take months. So I'm still waiting. I'm hoping to get it for Christmas. My Christmas
the true
moment.
Course of justice never did run smooth. No, I mean, I think that if we're talking about the drink of the year, you have to look at late spring, early summer, when the espresso martini crashed into Earth like the asteroid that killed the dinosaurs and just took over everything.
Yeah.
You remember that? I took a trip to Seattle in June, and I went to like their big, enormous roastery that they have that like provides all of the beans for like all of the Starbucks on the West Coast. And also, shockingly, you can get a good cup of coffee at the Starbucks. I was floored. But they have a bar in there. And I went there on a Monday morning at 10 a.m. And this bar was churning out flights of espresso martinis. And that's how you know a trend has truly gone mainstream, is if it's being done in bulk at Starbucks. So that to me, yes, in the morning, that to me is the drink of 2022.
I can't disagree with that. That drink was all over the place, just absolutely ubiquitous. Although I honestly can't really understand how or why, except for maybe to think this.
It's been around for a long time.
Yeah, exactly. But I think maybe the original Wake Me Up and Fuck Me Up, maybe that was just a collective subconscious coming out of the tail end of the pandemic and being like, wake us up and fuck us up. You know? Like, let's get the fucking party started again. So I don't hate on it. It's not a drink for me. It's not a drink I can make at my bars, but it's out there and it's doing its thing, and you know, it's getting people back out to the bars. So here's to it.
Well, and plus it's comfort food, you know, it's cocktail dessert. I mean, it's like, I'll tell you this, it would have been weird if the Negroni Spagliato had hit first and then we'd gone back to drinking espresso martinis after that. But I think it's sort of a natural progression. And first of all, like, I just want to take a moment to acknowledge that it's cool that like the trends that we're talking about for 2022 are actual drink trends instead of like, oh man, I hugged another human being this week and it was insane. You know, like that was where we were this time last year. So we've come a long way, and I think we should be thankful.
Yeah.
But you know, I think it's also, it's sort of part of a natural progression where it's like, okay, we got back into the bars and then we wanted something that was like familiar and fun. And that honestly, probably a lot of us got when we were 21 at bars because we thought it sounded sophisticated. And because it also, you know, tastes like a melted Frappuccino sometimes. And then we moved on to some more kind of complex stuff, like a drink that has Campari and vermouth and has a name that you would never know how to pronounce if you only saw it written out and didn't hear it said out loud.
I loved all the memes. They came, the SpaghettiOs.
Yeah.
I'm going to try this new trend. I'm putting SpaghettiOs in my Campari.
With Prosecco, no. Souther. Don't forget the Prosecco.
Never forget. Dude, I haven't had an espresso martini in probably 20 years. But I do like the idea, like just thinking about it really fundamentally, it's like we're talking about coffee and we're talking about bitters, you know, so like that's mm-hmm. pretty cool. You know, it's not like it's, you know, cotton candy vodka or some shit like
yeah.
You know,
I agree.
It's a noteworthy, but also because I don't drink coffee. I don't do caffeine at all. It's been about 7 or 8 years now, but I do know that there are some really excellent like coffee liqueurs out there. Right. So like it makes sense that to revisit something like a coffee, like an espresso martini with the modern coffee liqueurs and spirits and tinctures and bitters and things like that. It makes sense. I mean, in like taking that kind of cheesy drink, you know, that was like kind of born out of the 90s, you know, martini bars where, you know, they didn't even serve martinis, but everything was a martini, you know, but mm-hmm. the just like kind of like updating it with these like new products that are actually good, you know, like I'm for it, man. Like if I did caffeine, I would really be for it, but I don't know. I kind of appreciate it. It's a little overwhelming to see espresso martinis like just on like every menu out of nowhere, but I don't know, man, I'm for it.
I don't really hold a grudge against it. It's not a drink again for me or for my particular businesses. But if it's getting people out there and it's getting people to drink stuff, and you know, I've always used coffee as a, I don't want to say crutch, but as a tool to when people come into Amore and they say, "Oh, I don't think I like bitter." My first question is, "Do you drink coffee?" And they say yes, and I go, "Then you like bitter."
Yeah, mm-hmm. Exactly.
You know,
so I think it's pretty cool. Pretty cool that's like coffee and bitters. You know, like that's yeah, good job, 2022.
Good job. We did it.
Pull that out of the box of spiders. Anyway, we should probably take a quick break and hear from some sponsors. We're going to come back and keep wrapping up 2022 as we move into 2023. That just sounds weird on the tongue. So all right, we'll be right back.
It's the final stretch of 2022, and HRN needs your help. Our goal for the winter membership drive is to raise $30,000. Become an HRN member with a donation of any amount at heritageradionetwork.org/donate. Through creative, educational reporting, storytelling, and live events, HRN delivers thought-provoking exchanges about the real issues affecting our global food system. Your donation also supports our internship program, an essential part of HRN's work that educates the next generation of journalists. Donate at the $90 level before December 31st, and you'll receive a limited release HRN t-shirt designed exclusively for HRN members by artist Chema Scandal. When you become an HRN member at any level, you'll be the first to know about special events and get news updates created only for Food Radio Insiders. Help us meet our end-of-year fundraising goal with your tax-deductible donation. Go to heritageradionetwork.org/donate and become a member today.
And we are back. You are listening to the Speakeasy on Heritage Radio Network, and not just any speakeasy. This is our internationally acclaimed, multi-award winning, sells out every year holiday wrap-up show where we talk about kind of like some of the trends and just the impressions that the year that we're about to leave behind has left on us. And before the break, I was talking a little bit about how it's been inspiring and a touch weird just for me to see a new generation of bartenders come up who had this big pause in between where we were and where they were and the passing of the torch there. And they're bringing in a lot of ideas that aren't colored by, oh, that's the way we always did it, which I think is awesome. And I fully support them in that. And I wanted to ask you two, Souther and Damon, how that has been for you two running your spots, because one other buzzword that I think is going to really be associated with 2022 in the future is the Great Resignation, and, you know, folks really standing up for themselves and demanding things like, you know, a living wage and like good working conditions and, you know, just the respect that I feel a lot of crappier places in our industry consistently deny people, especially people who are less senior on the totem pole. So I wanted to ask you two what your impressions were of that and sort of how it you think that's going to affect our industry in the future going forward.
Well, Greg, I would tell you right away that people are definitely more demanding of what they deserve, and I believe they deserve it. So I'm happy to give as much as I can give at my various locations. And, you know, we're striving to get to a place where we can do even more still. You know, we've had guests on the show this year. For instance, Kate Gerwin was on down in Albuquerque at Happy Accidents, and she provides all of her employees with a living wage as well as insurance. So does Laura Newman down at in Alabama at her two Queens bars, Queens Park and Neon Moon. And, you know, I think these are they're standing up and being like leaders in that arena. And we're all looking towards them to do better and be better. And I think, again, in tandem with that, we have this group of younger, motivated folks who are coming on board, and they have more assets and more access to information. So they have an ability to kind of really leapfrog us forward, I think. So, like, obviously, everything that happened in the past year and 2 years with the pandemic, et cetera, was horrible and tragic and difficult. But it's sort of cleaned the slate in a lot of ways. You know, we've got a fresh board to write on, and here we go, right? How do you feel about that, Damon?
I totally. I mean, there are a lot of new faces out there, you know, and, it's cool because now they're getting, like, I think it's cool because, like, you know, we're old fucks who've been around the business for a long time.
Agreed.
This is not meant to be like a humble brag or whatever, but like, dude, why are magazines and authors, like, why are they hitting me up about recipes and about my ethos? When, like, sure, I've been in the business for a long time, but it's like, give the new people like some game time, you know, like some,
right. Get them off the bench.
Yeah, exactly. So like, I think it's really exciting. And you know, as you mentioned, there's like so much more information out there. I touch back on Drink Masters. I think we're in a gap right now. There's like a kind of if you're a hiring manager, it's hard to staff up right now because a lot of people have like kind of like moved in or out of the, you know, the business. But with these new books like the Oxford Companion and like the shows like Drink Master, it's like, you know, like this is inspiring new generations, and maybe not just new generations, but it's like kind of reinvigorating people who've been in the business for a long time that want to get into like the cocktail side, you know? So it's all positive forward movement. But we are seeing a little bit of a slump in staffing right now, but it's not just that, you know, the business owners, like you mentioned, like you gotta take care of your people and like, it's not going to happen overnight, but we're seeing a lot of forward movement on that as well. And, you know, like for us at Grand Army, it's like, we give like a lot of, like, what it comes down to is like ownership and autonomy, right? Yep. So like, if you don't have someone breathing down your neck and like kind of telling you how to do this or that, like you got old ass me telling you how to make a daiquiri, like fuck that. I'm not going to do that. Make the daiquiri however you want. Like whatever you think is the best, we're going to taste it. And we will like go and staff meetings. We'll like, you know, every once in a while, I think this is something that Phil Ward told me, you know, 12 years ago when he was on the show for the first time. He was like, you know, you got to constantly check your classic specs. And, you know, it's good to do that with a like the committee together. And like, when's the last time you made a Sazerac? When's the last time you made a Sazerac and tried it yourself? You know, it's like, you know, your palate changes, ingredients change, techniques change. So you got to constantly be doing that. But you have to like really nurture those that working relationship with your staff and with your coworkers. And like, you know, but I think ultimately it's kind of like, think about it this way. So if you're a tattoo artist or a barber, you know, you work in a place where it's like you don't own the salon or the tattoo parlor, right? But you have a booth and you pay a booth rental, essentially, right? But other than like the fact that you're paying somewhere, you have full autonomy there. That's like, yeah, it's you're making your own artwork. You're doing, you know, your own hours. And basically I've always felt that way about being a bartender. It's like, okay, well, you know what? I'm using your booze and your space to make money for me. And while I'm here, this is my bar. So yeah, like,
I agree to a certain point, obviously, you know, you gotta still stay within the parameters of the place itself and the vision of the place itself, but I get what you're saying.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think, and the other thing that I think is cool is that, you know, we're opening the door for those new ideas to come in, you know? And I mean, the thing about, you know, today's innovation is that they become tomorrow's standard practice.
Yeah.
Right.
Right.
And like, you know, this is what I think is cool. I mean, you know, I'm a big Elizabeth Warren fan. I'm a huge Lizzie boy over here. And so I like that. Not only are we getting people who are like doing these cool, innovative things and like changing the game and rethinking not just how we do, you know, Negroni Spagliatos with Prosecco, but how we do something as basic as like a Sazerac or a daiquiri is really cool. But I also think it's really cool. Like,
or, we have people,
or
a Sazeracery.
Ooh. All right. That one's free to all of our listeners. Yeah. So the new generation out there, go crazy.
Actually, guess number one, Brian Miller and I came up with the Sazerackery one night when we're at one of Julie's places, at Lani Kai, when we were doing a Tiki Monday with Brian Miller. And I was like, why can't you make a Sazerac and a daiquiri, like, have a baby? Anyway, so, but, you know, that's the innovation that becomes tomorrow's practice, right? Like you're saying.
Yeah, exactly. And I also think it's cool that we have people like Kate Gerwin, like, you know, Laura and Mud, who are doing these things where we're like, yeah, this is going to be, you know, we're going to provide this level of, you know, respect and lifestyle for our people. And then that's going to become, you know, tomorrow's standard practice. And I think that's awesome. And I was gonna transition to speaking of bad labor conditions, beer at the World Cup. But before we go there, Damon, it sounds to me like you came up with a recipe for a Sazerackery and you're holding out on us.
Oh, no, I got it. Yeah. I mean, like, yeah, it's a good one, too. It's complicated. But I'll find that recipe and we can post that. But Brian Miller and I came up with one night where we spent a lot of time on it too. Trust me. But it makes sense because, I mean, it's, you know, Peychaud's works with, you know, Peychaud's and Absinthe both work with rum. And Peychaud's in particular actually works really well with lime, but so does Absinthe. So like, it kind of became a hybrid. I can't remember if we put rye in that. Or if it was, oh no, we went classic Sazerac. So it actually had cognac and rum, brandy and rum are history's best friends. So, you know, like it worked out. So I'll dig that up. But I do want to talk about the World Cup. The World Empty Cup.
Empty Cup. Nice. What a fiasco that was for everybody involved.
We're in it right now. Like, so it's like World Cup time. I think it's a really amazing thing. Like, you know, like I grew up in a soccerless environment, basically, in Southwest Oklahoma. I never got to play soccer. I mean, I probably kicked the ball around a little bit, but, you know, we had baseball, basketball, and football and track. That was it. But it's something that as I got older and started like moving on to the world, it's like, I was like, oh man, this is pretty cool. It's a really unifying thing worldwide. Right. It's like, and I know Southern, you're not like a huge sports fan. I can't say
I'm
that,
not, but
really
I understand I definitely understand the impact that the World Cup has on the world.
It's very impactful. And like, but you know, I can tell you this. I've been to Yankees games, and I used to have season tickets for the Nets. You go to that game, what do? You drink beer, you know? Yeah. So, like,
mm-hmm. I think that's universally true. Whatever game it is, there's beer.
Whatever game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, well, I'm a highlight, huge baseball fan. When you go to the highlight match, yeah. Pass me a beer. I guess tennis is different. You need a Pimm's cup. But other than that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's how, as a baseball fan, you know, I acknowledge that the sport that I love to other people might not be the most interesting thing in the world, and that's okay. But the way I sell, you know, I was like, hey, come to a game with me. Don't think of it as a sports game. Think of it as a huge outdoor bar with expensive but decent drinks that occasionally has something interesting happening in the middle of it.
Yeah.
There you go. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I think that, let's get back to the World Cup, though. I think the issue for me is the sort of underhanded dealing. You know, if Budweiser is going to be the sponsor and they say, yeah, that's cool, come on down, and then at the last minute revoke it. But, you know, I don't know if you read the articles, but Budweiser had allocated so much beer from specifically the UK to bring to the World Cup that they were selling out. They were out of beer in a lot of places that they normally sell just so they could supply World Cup, and then they had it yanked. And also, just it was already in transit. Like, all of the mechanics were in motion, and to have it pulled, it just seems, I mean, I don't know, honestly, the true motivation. It seems pretty underhanded and dirty.
How are you going to be a soccer hooligan if you're not wasted, you know?
Yeah. Also, sounds to me like Souther's still a little bitter because he hasn't gotten his check yet.
Yeah, come on, Budweiser, get your shit together.
Yeah, Anheuser-Busch.
Actually, right, you know, speaking of beer, in this, dude, speaking of beer that doesn't have alcohol in it, like the Bud Light Lime-A-Rita. So the fiasco is that, like, someone said there's a class action lawsuit against Budweiser with the Lime-A-Rita. If the listeners didn't hear this episode that we talked about it, it's that it didn't have tequila. Is that, if I remember?
Basically, the lawsuits stipulated that people felt enough people, and believe me, I think this is all a crock of shit, but enough people felt that they were duped into thinking that it had tequila in it because it was called a Bud Light Lime-A-Rita, that they demanded some reparations or what have you, there's a class action suit, and even if you didn't have a receipt for having purchased it, you could get $9 and change or something, but if you had a receipt, you could get up to $20-something. And you know, I definitely had that stuff in the past, so I sent off for my check, and I'm still waiting. But they said it would just be months.
Only to frame it, though, right?
I just want to have a check from Anheuser-Busch on my wall. Yeah, it's a buyback. If they're buying me back a beer, it's not like I haven't drank enough of their products throughout my life. Believe me.
Mobile deposit, man. You can have the money in your bank account and on your wall at the same time.
Yeah, right.
But yeah, I mean, I think, you know, we'd be remiss if we're talking about, hey, where'd the booze go? And trends of 2022, if we didn't touch on the fact that we're seeing a lot of NA drinks in the space, particularly like some NA everywhere.
An absolute
including mountain. the first combination of two trends that I feel like have been on a collision course for a long time. In fact, we had her on our show, Claire Matern, who is launching Joni, which is a NA RTD company,
right?
Which is super cool and really tasty, and you know, it's a sign of the times that that's a thing that has gone mainstream enough that it's, you know, one, recognizable by the general public, and two, pretty good. Like, the standards of performance in that space are pretty high at this point. I think that's great.
I think when you have a market that's driven to desire something, you have a ton of creators rush to fill the gap. And what happens, I think, in that rush is you get a lot of, you know, pretty crappy stuff to fill the market. The market then reacts to that by purchasing it, trying it, and saying, you know, this sucks or this is good. And so the shake happens, and then the ones that suck fall away and the ones that are good remain. And then continue to get better. Practices get better and things get better. So that's the stage we're in right now with NA spirits, NA RTDs, NA everything. It's incredible how flooded the market is right now.
You know, there's actually, like, what I've learned this year, I mean, we've had a lot of guests on the show this and last year from the non-alcoholic realm, right?
Yep.
we had Athletic Brewing on twice. Their beer is awesome. There's also someone I'd like to get on the show soon. It's called Best Day Brewing. They make a non-alcoholic Kolsch that, like, I had one last night. I've been dabbling in the NA kind of space personally, just, you know, kind of slowing down. And that Kolsch is awesome. You would never know that it was non-alcoholic. So, like, the standard, as you said, is like it's become higher, right? And so it's really, really cool. And it's been fun for me to just, like, kind of see that happening and the quality going up. But, you know, there's something that I feel like this bar, it was up in Harlem. I want to say it was Harlem. There was a non-alcoholic cocktail bar, Speakeasy Jazz Club, that was opened by a church. There was some articles about it in the Times and I think in New York Magazine. And it was all, there was no alcohol. And it was like full on jazz club, speakeasy, you know, live music kind of thing. And like, it was ahead of its time. You know, this was about, I would say almost 10 years ago when they opened. And I don't know if they're still there. I haven't heard anything about it for a while, but it'd be kind of cool in 2023 to see some places open up that, you know, we all have.
Well, speaking of drinks. Damon, there's one in the East Village. It's called, I don't know how to pronounce it, Heckgate. And it's on Avenue B between 10 and 11, I believe. Right kind of across the street from Maiden Lane. I don't know if you remember that place.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's the woman who opened the bar Lucky's, I can't remember. Just a little dive bar that's awesome. Love it. She opened this spot directly across the street from herself, and it is she calls it Heckgate Cafe and Elixir Lounge, and it is all NA, but it's when you go in there, you feel like you are at a bar, and they're making
unique, that's great.
They're making unique and interesting drinks. They have plenty of unique and interesting RTDs. They have the entire back bar is stocked with all of these, as I said, flood. There's a flood of NA, quote-unquote, spirits out there. So, I mean, it's a thing that we can poo-poo it or, you know, shy away from it, or we can embrace it and move along with it, you know?
No, I think we should embrace it. I think, like, that's what I'm predicting my 2023 Confederacy trend, because I don't want it to be like
ball,
a fad.
You got your 8-ball out?
On our award-winning, like, multi-platinum. You know, when they send, like, the NASA missions out to outer space and they have, like, the recordings of, like, a baby laughing and, you know, the I Had a Dream speech, right in between those two sound bites is this episode.
Yeah.
You know, for all of the universe to understand what humanity and what the Earth experiences, it's this show with Martin Luther King and baby laughing. But I have a dream that this year will provide us with some more non-alcoholic cocktail bars and programs. Like I said, we all have non-alcoholic drinks on our menus, but I think it's like just creating that space for people who don't necessarily want to imbibe. You know.
Listen, if you want to throw a prediction out there, I've got one, and he was on the show as well. Austin Henley, dear friend to the show, dear friend to me, mm-hmm. former employee of Maury Margo, now the head bartender at Cato out in L.A. They got a Michelin star, and he is running their bar program there, and he himself doesn't drink. You know, tastes, of course, to make sure the quality is there, but they only do a tasting menu for their Michelin starred situation, and they offer a flight of wine, they offer, or a flight of cocktails to go along with, or a flight of non-alcoholics. And the stuff he's doing is so razor sharp. I truly believe that that he's going to at least get the nomination, if not the win, for best restaurant bar for Tales of the Cocktail. That's my prediction. Nice. That's my shoe-in. That's my lock of the week, guys. That's a pretty big shoe. I say that because, you know, I was out there and I got to see it myself, and it's pretty incredible stuff. And I would also put this on there, which is like, sure, they have it, they offer it. That's great. That's real nice. But he says they sell sometimes, you know, they do about 80 covers a night in a fancy place like this, or 80 reservations a night. And he said, I'll sell 30 of the non-alcoholic pairing flights with the tasting menu of, you know, I think it's 10 courses. So it's intricate and it's beautiful and it's well presented. And I mean, it's the consumer is demanding it. We cannot deny the consumer.
Right.
Yeah. So
very cool.
I love it, and I'm going to shy away from making any predictions for 2023. You know what? After 7 years straight of saying it's going to be the year of cachaça, I've decided to finally give up the dream.
Cachaça, rum, and sherry are always sherry, up, they're always exactly. up there, and they never quite come through.
Yep. The what's her name? The woman who like always got nominated for an Academy Award, but never
Susan Lucci.
Made it.
Yeah.
Susan Lucci. Thank you. Yeah. I was like Judith Light. No, but anyway, I'm not going to make predictions for 2023 because I think that it's important for us to take this opportunity to actually kind of like, you know, pat ourselves on the back just a little bit for the fact that, you know, we had a good year. We made some decent choices and we're at a place where we can, you know, contemplate forward momentum again instead of survival. So right. this is my humble plea to keep those, you know, good riddance, this year sucked memes off of Instagram and just kind of like take a moment to be like, you know what? It was
not so bad.
We did a good job.
Yeah.
Kudos congratulations to us.
Kudos to us as a whole, as a group, as a species, you know, not so bad.
Yeah. And on that hopeful adjacent note, I think this is it for us for 2022, guys.
Yep.
Yeah. So this wraps up episode 496, fellows. The show started on January 12th, 2011, meaning we're coming into our 12th year and our 500th episode is coming up fast. So very excited to see what Speakeasy does next year, 2023. Very happy to be with you guys to do it. So thanks for always having me around.
And thanks to you all out there listening too. We really appreciate it. And we love hearing from you and we love getting to do this show because we know that, you know, we hope, we don't know for a fact, but we hope that there are people out there who get, you know, some interesting tidbits or knowledge or just like a good cheap laugh out of this show every now and again. And I just wanted to say, thanks. Thank you for listening. We really appreciate it. We couldn't do it without you.
Right on. Yeah. It's always fun for me to get to meet the listeners of the show. Souther, when you first came on as a co-host, used to say that for the four people out there listening, but there are more than four. I can tell you that from personal experience. So yeah, I want to say thank you as well to all of our listeners, great people of the bar and cocktail enthusiast community. And yeah, you know, and I, you know, we'd be remiss to not thank Heritage Radio Network for having us on.
Absolutely.
Greatest radio station on planet Earth and beyond.
Yeah.
But that's it for the Speakeasy this week and this year.
Yeah.
So happy holidays to everyone and have a safe and happy new year. Until next year. Cheers, everyone.
Cheers, everybody. Cheers. Thanks so much. So you
don't shun the devil with your... The Speakeasy is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food and drink radio supported by you. Keep in touch at heritageradionetwork.org/subscribe.